It's time for Intersections, where art and science meet, your weekly hour of conversation, where you learn about curious ideas, creative works, and interesting phenomena with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Now, it's time for Intersections, where art and science meet.
I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversation. In today's conversation, we're going to be talking about how repurposed buildings for the arts can create an open forum for conversation that will engage artists in rethinking the term outsider art, which I love what we're going to be able to talk about. And we're going to reconsider what does it mean inside, outside construction? What are some of the problems that you can run into when you repurpose a building, particularly when you repurpose for the arts? So this is going to be really fun. And Krista, I'll let you introduce our guest.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Krista Hoffman-Longton. I'm an associate professor of communication studies at IUPUI and assistant dean for faculty affairs and professional development at the IU Med School. And I'm really excited to have our folks with us today from Indie Convergence and really excited about this inside outside conversation. So what might be helpful for our listeners is just to have each of our guests introduce themselves and maybe talk a little bit about your role with Indie Convergence before we kind of jump into some of those deeper questions. So Caitlin, would you mind starting us off?
Sure. My name is Caitlin Negron. I'm the executive director and co-founder at Indie Convergence. And I do all of the organizing, I guess, at the company.
It sounds like you're the rudder for that ship then. That's wonderful. Robert, would you like to go next?
Sure. My name is Robert Negron, and I am the artistic director for Indie Convergence. So we've been gearing up for our residency here. So I've just mostly meet with artists and handle the portion of our company that works in community work within the Near West.
Wonderful. Good to meet you. And Kara.
Hi, my name is Kara Hawkins. I'm owner and founder of Innova Artiste. We are a design, marketing, and education company specializing in architecture and development. And we are, Indie Convergence is one of our current projects that we have.
So wonderful to hear about these great things that y'all are working on. I know we're going to dig deep into those. So I love the kind of inside outside concept. And I'm wondering, you know, when we talk about these kinds of opportunities for the arts to kind of come together in spaces where folks might not normally encounter art. Can you talk about some of the exciting opportunities? And Caitlin, maybe we can start with you, some of the exciting opportunities that come from art in non-traditional spaces.
Sure. I might kick this pretty quickly over to Robert, but Indie Convergence likes to work collaboratively. All of our projects that we do are in collaboration with a community partner or another artistic partner. And we've recently started to move to more outdoor programming, outdoor mobile programming, and that's taking things into spaces in our community that are actually really ripe in a way for different types of arts events, but maybe haven't been seen that way before. And so lots of the work we do is along the White River. And so there's lots of opportunities to that where arts might not have been seen in like a performance setting. And so we work there. And then in our building, we are building it out to be an art space, but also a community space. So it's sort of an all-in-one. And it's been that since we moved into our building in 2016.
Robert, do you want to follow up on that as the sort of resident carpenter? Talk about that idea of kind of thinking about you know, our spaces differently when we think about art, we think about community as well.
Yeah, sure. So when we moved into our building, the purpose of that was to house our residency program. So that's working with interdisciplinary artists throughout the United States. The model is half Indianapolis artists and half out of town artists to come together for these residencies. But we knew moving in, we didn't have a business model or an agenda shaped on what would happen outside of the building or within it as a community space, right? So we were able to just kind of open the doors and let it be utilized as needed. And it turned into what it was as a result of its use rather than a preconceived notion of what it should be. And we take that same stance with things that we do outside of the building, which is, again, because it wasn't part of our business model, we didn't have to come up with an idea and then try and sell it and do it. We work only in collaboration for the spaces that we work in the community. So Caitlin mentioned the river, and that was a large collaboration with the Near West Collaborative and also reconnecting to our waterways and residents that were already working on things. So essentially our model is to double down on things already happening, not create new things, just bring more resources and capacity to what's already happening. So a lot of our work on the river was, that was almost kind of an odd thing because there really was nothing happening, but we identified it quickly as an asset within the community that was going to be a large determining factor of what happened to our community in the future, how that was developed and how it was utilized. So a lot of, Caitlin used the word ripe, which I generally agree with, but I think what it, like our thought was, you know, if we're looking at, and I'll just use the word gentrification, even though I think it's not a useful word for just for getting into the nitty gritty of what is happening. But if you're looking, we have an amazing culture in the Near West. And part of that, part of fighting the negative aspects of gentrification is that you want, if there are new folks to move in, if you do have building abandoned buildings, a glut of abandoned buildings, and there are going to be new folks moving into the neighborhood, what you want are people opting into the existing culture rather than building a culture on top of what's there. So part of that was creating opportunities and working in collaboration for some of the existing cultural events and concepts and ideas already happening in our community to happen more out loud. Because if it's not happening out loud, you don't get that opt-in factor. You get people that are assuming nothing's happening and just bringing kind of their own cultural concepts and ideas into the community. So that's been a large part of what steers how we work and who we're working with and where.
So Robert, when you...
Oh, go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
No, go ahead. But Robert, when you're doing that kind of work, I think it dovetails really into what you're trying to do with the building, Kara. So yes. You're working in the community, right?
Yes.
But you don't want to lose the character of the space.
Yes.
For the community. In other words, you don't want to come in outside as a designer and create something that doesn't really fit with the culture that exists. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yes, you hit it right on the head. You know, that's such a challenge, you know, being a designer in this day and age, because you have the duality of, you know, Robert saying, you know, this word gentrification. And it's this kind of word that's not looked highly upon, you know, because we also know the effects, the negative effects that it has, you know, the displacement, you know, of the people connected to the areas, these neighborhoods, you know, and bringing in somewhat strangers per se or foreigners to the beauty and the richness of these neighborhoods and these areas, you know, that cultivate and in combination create a city. You know, so for myself personally, you know, my past in architecture has been both residential and commercial. So my past in design, I came from a past of designing hospitals and universities, you know, airports, et cetera, which in a term have to be these new progressive buildings, you know, just as society evolves, you know, but then on the residential side, I come from a background of renovating old historic buildings, you know, into new apartments, you know, doing new construction homes, et cetera. So I seen both sides of it. And I see the negatives and, you know, the pros of both. So for me personally, you know, in developing Innova Artis, I came from this corporate world, this corporate machine of doing these things. And I often saw the large corporations get taken care of, these large clients and all of these outrageous budgets. But I had to say, well, who's handling the people that really drive these communities, you know, the pulses, you know, who's handling these amazing companies that are, you know, like what Robert and Caitlin have, you know, that are keeping people that are in the creative industry or that really have a passion and a drive in different industries that enrich our community and our day-to-day lives, you know? So I was like, who's helping those? Who's helping those amazing people? You know, and I come from that, you know, my family have been entrepreneurs across all industries, creative and not. So that's really why I stepped outside and developed Innova, so we could really connect with the community, connect with these, you know, these startup companies, you know, these wonderful, amazing businesses, you know, and provide and make sure what they needed got done, regardless of context, regardless of budget, you know. And in saying that, you know, kind of a segue to, I assume what we'll probably touch on, that, you know, taking that on, you know, we have to face a few more things, you know, but it's all worth the while, because I believe without the pulse, without the beautiful people that are keeping our communities going and striving, we're nothing. You know, so that's very much, you know, my passion and what I try to, you know, balance every day, you know, keeping the context of neighborhoods and communities, but also kind of keeping pushing forward the developments and the new progression that we need in design.
Those are really, really great thoughts. And I like how all that works together. Krista, I interrupted you, so I'll let you go this time.
Thanks. Yes, I was thinking about, and this actually dovetails really well with what Kara was talking about there in terms of thinking about the community members and their roles in shaping what becomes of these amazing projects. And so, you know, Robert, you were talking about the waterways project and just the, you know, the idea of the potentially problematic term gentrification. I'm wondering if, and this might be a Robert question or a Caitlin question, I'll let you guys decide. Can you give us an example of, as you've worked on the West Side, one of the aspects of the project that you worked on and how you were able to really connect what you were doing with what was already happening within the community?
You can go ahead, Robert.
Sure. Early on in our, I guess I should back up a little bit. When we first started, again, I'd kind of mentioned that, you know, community work and all those things, they were not part of our business model. So we weren't, like I said, weren't required to jump in and start doing something. So we actually engaged in a year of listening before doing any outward programming. You kind of had this inside outside theme, and that was siloing those two things was one way that we looked at it, where entering our building is consent to interact with whatever the artists are working on, whatever's going on, but that anything that we did outside, that would fall under the category that a resident may have to interact with it without consent, right? So that was a big part of like our thinking and what was happening. So after that year was up, I just went to every meeting I could, got to really know what was going on. And by the time that year was up, we were actually being asked to do specific things rather than us coming up with ideas. And one of the first things we did, which I really thought was fun, was LISC was creating kind of these open houses. And one of the signals that they were working off of was the amount of cash sales that were happening in the neighborhood rather than realtor-led sales. And so they were actually trying to get realtors to look at some of these buildings and also just to get folks that were interested in seeing the different neighborhoods in the Near West, because we have Paulville, Hawthorne, Stringtown, We Care, and they are very different neighborhoods. So part of that was instead of having kind of these open houses or like tours or whatever. We went with each neighborhood and said, you know, like how would you want to be seen? Like, let's come up with a concept that gives you control over what is being seen and what's being presented. And also if there are homes that like abandoned homes that are going to be revitalized and then sold, who is it that you would like to be looking at these homes, right? So each neighborhood came up with their own concept for creating an event within and around some of these abandoned homes that we created, turned some into galleries, did some podcasting and live shows out of some. And that I thought was really cool because it really just kind of allowed each neighborhood to choose the theme and also allowed the option to identify as like neighbors on the block who were there, who could be asked specific questions, and then the ability to identify as like someone who is just visiting and taking a look. And this was very early on. This was five or six years ago. And it's a really different kind of setup now. But it really kind of, it helped us. We try to develop language in communication with the community that says what we're going to do very clearly, so that when we are not in alignment with that, it's obvious and it can be addressed immediately. So we kind of coined the moniker of revitalization without displacement and focus on current resident culture. So if anything that we're doing is outside of those bounds, then we know that we're off priority. And that's been kind of a helpful way to look at it. And a lot of the things Kara mentioned, I just like to kind of sing her praises. She's no joke. When we were looking at, when we first moved into the building, all we did was put a slap coat of paint and our logo, like our name on the front, so that people knew who we were, but we purposefully didn't want it to look out of place. We wanted it to look like it had kind of been there for a while and just was kind of something new happening. And we focused on really making the inside something special. And as the years went on, we finally got to the point where we were able to cobble together some grants to make this happen, but also, okay, I think the community is ready for us to do something with the facade. To make a little change. But in doing that, we worked with different designers and it was like, we want it to be creative, right? But we don't want it to be this big loud thing that stands out on the block. We still want it to be a part of this. So even having the wood be a similar color to the building surrounding it, we talked with Kara about, you know, what we want. We wanted to hodgepodge these windows. and that was a huge thing. And as we worked with other designers, they would come back and we'd be like, okay, that's basically what we said, but it looks like it's like belongs up in like,
up north.
North, yeah. Like Broad Ripple, like kind of a setup. And it's like, okay, yeah, but like, we don't want to bring like the Broad Ripple aesthetic down here because our buildings are built in 1915, right? So how do we kind of keep that look? And she was really the first to come back and like have taken in all these very weird ideas we had and show us a picture. And we're like, yeah, that's it. Cause we'd always, even with the front being white, our business card is just white with Indie Convergence on the front. And we always liked the idea of we're not front loading with some sort of big design for the artists. The exciting stuff happens inside. This is just this like little white card with like very simple thing here, and our building matched that, but we're trying to balance like, how do we do something funky to show this interesting thing, but keep it downplayed too, because we want that same sense of the cool stuff happens inside, you gotta come inside. and Kara was able to just work within our budget and not make us feel guilty about our budget and also just really hear all of it and respond as a collaborative artist in a way that was just, you know, amazing. So
more windows.
I think what occurs to me, and it really are two things, but one of them is, and I think I've talked about this actually on the show before, but the idea that there are three things that can actually isolate or break a community. There are many things, but three major kinds of construction things. And one is rivers, obviously. And so White River for a long time created a barrier between where you guys are on that part of the west side in Hawville and the developing downtown and the IPUI campus. And so for a long time, that was, you know, that was an isolator. Another one is interstates. And we've seen the effect in Indianapolis and other cities where interstates went through the city rather than what they were intended to do was go around the city. They went through and they were a form of urban renewal. They actually went through and took down houses where they had problem neighborhoods. And so that was another way of breaking it. And then our other one was railroads. And we had railroads, which you have many out there as well, that also created, again, corridors where there wasn't, you know, access to the south, except on a few roads. And so that just, that all those together created it. Then we came up with this concept that I felt like was another barrier. And I wanted to ask you guys about this. And that's, I personally feel like we came up with this idea that putting artists at the center, this whole movement where artists were supposed to solve everything that was wrong. And so we have a lot of organizations that kind of pick that up as their moniker and they go and they descend on a neighborhood and they change the character of who it is to what they think it ought to be. So can you guys talk a little bit about how you're not that movement? That would be really helpful.
Yeah. A lot of the talks I give, and Caitlin can jump in on this too, but we also try to train artists about it's a dangerous time and for artists to be doing their work, and they often aren't realizing who's pulling the strings. And I'll just say, even for our organization, it's been difficult to keep afloat because the funding stream moved so strongly toward, how are you working with community members? And, you know, not all art needs to do that, nor should it. And also just talking to organizations that, like, no, this is a funding cycle. If you are not prepared to work in community for the long haul, just sit this one out. Just work on the things that you're best at. Do not allow this funding cycle to change the DNA of your company. And we kind of have this like half and half aspect, but even just through the way the funding was coming in, we even ended up with our very small capacity as an organization, sometimes being overtaken by the amount of hours and time it took for community work. Like right now I can say we're not accepting new community work with COVID and with all these other things. Like, I don't feel like I can do the work the way that I know that it needs to be done. And no community work is better than bad community work. So we're gonna stick with what we've already been doing. And we know that we are working in collaboration with residents on, and just kind of work on that for now. Before we take on any kind of new projects, because it is so easy to end up pushing an agenda that you don't even understand what's coming in behind you and who's actually funding these things. I think, I mean, Caitlin can speak more to that, but there's just a lot of people come in with ideas about a specific spot or a building. And having been here long enough, we go, oh, you better talk to so-and-so because, you know, they've been working on that for like 4 or 5 years. And, you know, these things happen slow, especially for smaller companies. They don't get the funding to just go for it. But it's not a blank slate just because it's an empty building. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Caitlin and I talk about it a lot. I know you have some choice words for like some of the things that, we've been asked to do or also we've seen kind of done very well and also very badly, I suppose.
I guess I should jump in. I will not use choice words.
Sorry. Yeah, we're not going to call it.
Okay. Yeah, it's an interesting give and take. Robert and I, and I'm sure Kara as a designer too, we know and feel that arts are an essential part of any community. And then, well, how do you incorporate that? And who, I think maybe what Robert is touching on is who gets to be the chooser of what art gets brought out loud, like Robert was talking about. You know, and that's complicated in a whole bunch of different ways and layers, and it's just, it's complicated. I mean, I feel like just that topic maybe could be its entire, well, I'm sure it's several books. Like, who are the choosers and why are they the choosers and should they change? And then once they've changed, when do they change again? I guess it's sort of on the same vein, my thought on that is that the way that artists are kind of used to implement the will of what we perceive as sort of like just like large, not very delicate development and or large corporations mm-hmm. of any kind. Artists. That, you know, artists are just sort of brought in to soften the blow in a way. And to, you know, we've gotten calls before like, hey, can you find an artist for this fill in the blank project? It's like, well, yes. And what is the project? Who's in charge? What's the pay? What's the timeline? Is there a continuation of the project? You know, if it's a mural, what building is it, you want us to do that? And, you know, it's sort of this, you use window dressing a lot. And so my wish for this type of development that we're talking about is that creatives are brought in to the table at the beginning of the project by large development companies, by corporations, that you put creatives and artists at the design and development table, at the table where the funding is, decide where it's going and how it's incorporated, before you come to a place like Indie Convergence and say, oh, we saw your cool new windows and we thought that you guys could support us. Because we don't have the capacity, and maybe, like Robert said, something is already rolling and somebody else needs to be in charge of it. So, yeah.
Caitlin oversaw really kind of a kind of overhaul and discussion with our board, our existing board, on what we are and what we do. I shared like frustration with Caitlin, was like, well, I can convince outside forces like, no, we don't, that's not how we work, so we're not the right fit here, but I can't convince our board or don't want to be doing that. And so Caitlin really oversaw this like really incredible overhaul and kind of finding consensus within our board, like, was last year, right, Caitlin?
Mm-hmm.
And there was something, there was a phrase that came out of it that I love, where we're talking about not being gatekeepers,
it was a pledge now that we have, I can pull it up really fast, that we're a river connect, hold on.
Yeah, we're not gatekeepers, instead of river connecting resources and seemingly disparate.
Oh.
Like, right, something like that?
I got it, hold on.
It's helped our board really like, but, you know, until you name something again, like you can't have the discussion until it's named and agreed on that's the goal. So
right.
It was really helpful. So,
Caitlin, you got it?
I do. We are not gatekeepers, but rather a river connecting assets and talents to resources.
That's wonderful. And that's a really good segue into letting us have a short break.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Krista Longton, and today we're having a conversation with Caitlin Negron, Robert Negron, and Kara Hawkins about the challenges in design, construction, and programming a space for the arts. And as we left for the break, I was really struck by the approach that all of you take to collaboration. As Mark mentioned earlier, I use a lot of improv theater techniques when I work with scientists and community members to come to shared ideas about science and about the nature of art and science together. And I use a metaphor from improv theater that is bring a brick, not a cathedral, right? The idea that you've got kind of, everybody's got their pile of bricks and we're coming to make this cathedral together. But if you come with a plan for the cathedral in your head, you're going to be disappointed because everybody else has a cathedral too. So that whole bring a brick, not a cathedral concept really like played out as I was listening to you talk. So Kara, I know that your approach really focuses on kind of how do we design around what problem we have to solve or what opportunity we have from what is currently here, what we see around us. Can you talk a little bit about your process and then I'll have Robert and Caitlin jump in.
Sure, yes. Coming from this point of view of a professional designer, you know, an architect, you know, professional, in the architecture realm, I very much, before that, I am a product of what, you know, Indie Convergence is and what Robert and Caitlin do. I was that kid in theater, you know, I was that kid in sculpting and painting and fashion design and dance. So, you know, that passion that's inside of me has never left, and I have such a special place in my heart for them, even outside of this project, you know, because I know what the hard work is on the other side of it. I know the day-to-day, and what the blood, sweat, and tears, what the result of that is. You know, I am literally a result of the people and the community that they're enriching at all ages, and what that looks like in different avenues, you know, to grow up and pursue a career in theater or film or dance or et cetera, or architecture and beyond, and construction and more. And with seeing that, I know what collaboration does, like you were speaking on, you know, and I very much come from the foundation of we are nothing without one another. You know, some people like to pat themselves on the back. I did this on my own. I got myself here. And it's just not true. You know, there was someone there. There is someone there silently or, you know, up front that was cheering for you, you know, or donating or showing up, you know, or whatever that looked like, and very much that somewhat kicked to the side, you know, in the corporate world. You know, it's this very egotistical, environment sometimes where people want these accolades and they want these awards and, you know, with the monetary that comes with it. And what it boils down to is we need structures, whether it's our home, whether it's our school, whether it's our business, you know, whatever that is, we need them. And we need them regardless of budget. We need them regardless of, you know, maybe a timeline or these heavy restrictions from conglomerates that have maybe donated money and they want to slap their name on the front. You know, regardless, we need these structures. And for me, that's my passion. And there's a lot of client, you know, and even kind of touch on what we just touched on, being selective. And that's something day to day I have to deal with, you know, because I have clients that come to me that are not a fit for Innova. I don't necessarily want to develop 100 homes, in an area that doesn't really need help. You know, I don't necessarily need to do that. I don't necessarily want to right now, you know, do a 50-foot structure, you know, in the heart of downtown just because it looks beautiful. You know, I want to help the people that help us, and what that looks like, you know, Caitlin and Robert both touched on it, the selectivity of it, you know, and I like to say right now being creative is very trending. It's kind of this seems kind of cool from the outside. I want to be a creative, and it kind of sometimes falls in the laps of people whose integrity is not in it, whose heart and passion. This is our livelihood. What Indie Convergence does every day, this is their livelihood. What Innova does every day, this is our livelihood. So I take very seriously, you know, who we collaborate with, what projects we take on, because at the end of the day, I don't want us to be a part of something that isn't true, that isn't funneling back into the community. you know, that isn't, you know, standing on a foundation of prosperity, you know, and enrichment. So that's very much this duality, you know, kind of have to deal with. And I stepped away from that, you know, pretty much when I left my corporate per se career, I was in every sector of something that was excluding community per se. You know, I worked on, you know, the Indigo Station downtown. So you could say that's community. You know, I've worked on, you know, Hot Eskenazi and different, you know, within the city and across the country. But how directly was it connecting? You know, and the people that I was having to work with, they didn't understand design. You know, they didn't understand, you know, the patients and their needs, or, you know, the day-to-day people that were using the bus station and things like this. So I'm very, very passionate, along with my, you know, other design team members, on what we do. You know, and we take on, you know, we kind of suit up, and, you know, and our motto is, we bring your vision to life. You know, so with Caitlin and Robert saying, you know, I don't take any credit that, you know, what Indie Convergence is becoming is their vision. You know, I was just a vessel to be able to help them to bring it to life, you know, and has it been, you know, it's been a journey. We laugh about it, but, you know, it's truly been a journey, you know, and yes, we've had to acquire some different situations, some challenges typically may not have, you know, if it was a different scenario, or like they say, you know, with budget and timeline and all of that, but you know, that proposes challenges as well, you know, but for me, it's that end goal, who it's affecting, and to know all of the lives that Indie Convergence will change once, you know, it's come to fruition. So I agree with the collaboration factor.
Caitlin, do you want to talk a little bit about kind of your approach or your values around collaboration? I know we've kind of talked around it a little bit, but just kind of putting, like, thinking about Indie Convergence as a collaborator, what do you see as sort of that secret sauce that makes it work?
Sure. I would say that just, you know, Robert and I really think that any project is better if you take the time to involve more people with different ideas, and that one of the most exciting things that happens when we work with our artists is when somebody says, no, I don't think so, here's a different idea, let's try this. And we try to create an environment with the artists and with our community for people to be able to say that freely and openly, to create a space where somebody is like, oh, well, that is a better idea. Let's do try that together. So that's not a very elegant description of it, but I would say that's kind of what it boils down to is we worked with this great guy named Zach LaLiberte, who's just this fantastic improv artist, and he's a filmmaker. He owns a production company, and from his improv work, he has this fun thing: when something isn't working, you just go, nope, and you start over again. And I think that's a key to collaboration, is being able to just pull that nope card and start over and incorporate the other ideas of the other people in the room. And I'm so excited that we're doing our residency again, and they kind of get to come inside the literal nope of our construction project that we've been working on. You know, we wanted to do one thing, and, you know, we had to say, nope, start again. And so we've worked and figured it out a different way. You know, and with our work on the river, it's sort of the same thing. It's like, oh, the river went up 3 feet yesterday. Well, I guess we'll move our performance. And so, you know, we work with our White River partners and with the artists and with a local fisherman who we meet, who tells us, you know, actually there's some space down the river. So I think collaboration is really flexibility.
And the cool thing about the nope and the again, in terms of like the type of collaboration that we really like to see, is he has an exercise that allows that nope, because, you know, don't say no. But there's this like thing in improv where everybody thinks you can't say no. You can say no, like conflict's what's interesting, but say nope instead of no, like don't shut it down, right? The exercise is kind of centered on your job is not, like you're talking about the brick in the cathedral. Don't come with an idea, like you're already human beings are creative and interesting and, you know, all these amazing things, right? And your job is to turn the person on that you're working with. If you're focused on turning them on and they go, and it doesn't work, and they go, nope, okay, I'll try again. Maybe it's this, does this turn you on? And then they go, yes, let's go do that. If that's what your focus is on finding the thing that is turning your fellow collaborator on, and that's reciprocal, you're off to the races. And you end up somewhere completely different that you didn't realize, having thought of, trying to build the scene out or come with a cathedral in mind already. And we had one issue with the design was we thought there was an initial idea to keep, we wanted so very much to keep the original brick from 1915, but it was just a mess. And there was a building down, four buildings down from us that about 6 or 8 years ago, somewhere in there, the facade literally just fell into the street off the front of the building. And this was built at the exact same time. And so we knew that like there was a potential for this thing just to go at some point. And once Kara got in there and noticed that like, oh, there's actually no brick down in the bottom and it's the top that's the brick and it's all sitting on a giant I-beam. And we don't know how that I-beam is actually attached. And so we're finally like, all right, fine, scrap it. Like we can't afford to do all of this masonry work. And so we had, which was also an amazing thing as a collaborator, Kara agreed to just dump the brick beside our place. And then we worked with residents and volunteers. We culled through all the bricks and found the good ones and cleaned them off and got off all the grit. And they went down to Belmont Beach on the river to be used as fire pits. So these bricks that had been in the community for 100 years got to stay and still be utilized in some way. So that was kind of a cool little aspect of it.
So I like this, what I really like in all that you're saying, all of you, is there's almost this creative dance that's happening there between all of you. And Kara, there is that improv with the building, right?
Yes.
I mean, you can't say no and cut off the conversation. However, there are some things that reasonably within finance and other things are not doable, no matter how we'd like to do it. And so to keep the conversation alive and the creativity going with Robert and Caitlin and others in the community at the same time that you're having to say, I just don't think this is going to, this is not going to be possible. And so I love that. And I love, Caitlin, the ideas that that in the way you're thinking and the way you think about how the building's going to be used and how the building has life, not only there, but this is that outside part again. The bricks went somewhere else in the community where it had a repurposed life, but they still exist. And I just loved all that.
Yeah. It's, and even just, to piggyback off of that, it's, I'm like looking from the outside, right now we've been in the thick of it, and it's had us on moments of pins and needles, probably borderline tears, joy, laughter, all the above. But, just knowing, what the end result will do that's the beautiful part of it, is knowing what the potential can be, and that makes taking on these blows so much more worth it, taking on these challenges that we've been faced with, and boy have we been, this pandemic, obviously it's not been on our side, inflation, and being, on the receiving end of resources that are coming from out of state borders, out of country borders. And we know what that has been. So, to take on all of that, it's kind of this bittersweet thing, because I think as we go along with it, it's helped us to become better problem solvers. Like you're saying, it's helped us to come together and figure it out and saying, no, we're not going to throw in the towel. That's not an option. You don't do that. You try to figure it out, and it's the beautiful harmony of us all doing that together, you know, and working against these things and pushing back, you know. So I'm so grateful for that, you know, because every scenario doesn't do that. You know, if something's not challenging, it's not bettering you, it's not helping you. You know, so as challenging and wonderful as it has been, I think it's helped. You know, it's helped us. You know, we're such a fighter story of, you know, I know people and contractors and architects and et cetera that walked away from projects in the pandemic, threw the towel in, you know, and just washed their hands because it was either too difficult, you know, they didn't have enough funding for it and all these other things. And, you know, what is the reason for that? You know, and I think it's even more beautiful, you know, Robert and Caitlin have a beautiful baby boy, you know, and I, you know, my parents were entrepreneurs as well, you know, in both the creative industry and others. And I remember being so proud of them, you know, being, you know, seeing them at work and being with them on their projects or as they traveled and seeing such the community engagement that they did, you know, and even, you know, with my family, my great uncle and my grandparents were a part of the development on Mass Ave and, you know, the businesses on Indiana Avenue, et cetera, you know, in the new District 16 Tech our family is a part of. So I've been that little kid that was sitting on the sidelines watching and being proud, you know. So for me, I kind of get butterflies thinking of when he gets a little older, he'll be so proud to know what his parents do and all the lives that they affect. So, you know, I've just been, you know, such an honor, you know, to be on this journey with them.
Kara, thanks for that really thoughtful idea. It's just a reminder that the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversations like we're having today between art and science. And we encourage you to explore with your family and others in your community and have conversations about what we were talking about today, as well as other things. And we'll be right back.
Join us for the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series on Saturday afternoons at 2:00. Host Michael Toulouse brings you his fine commentary as we showcase faculty and visiting artists performing exceptional concerts and recitals from the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center on the University of Indianapolis campus. That's the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artist Series, Saturdays at 2 p.m. on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. We're having a conversation with Caitlin Negron, Robert Negron, and Kara Hawkins about how repurposed buildings for the arts can create an open forum for conversation that engages artists in rethinking the problematic term of outsider art and reconsidering how all of us move between inside and outside. And I know, Robert, some of the projects that you've been working on recently really kind of get into this space. So I'm wondering if there's a project maybe that you would like to highlight or talk about.
Sure. I mean, just the general build out of the build out of the building. Is that a way that you say that? One of the things that COVID kind of provided us. Kara mentioned we have a baby boy, and he's a COVID baby, and so we, you know, had him in our construction site essentially, like while he was a baby, and he's grown up very aware of his surroundings as a result, because he had to, which is awesome. And but another aspect of it was this time away helped us to understand as professionals like what we were interested in as artists. And we're thinking, you know, we're working on the river, we have the floating stage. Managing the downstairs as a venue space as income was just kind of untenable after a while. It's a 3-4 person job. We're already having another 3-4 person job with the other stuff we do. And we had been in discussions with a dance company called Kinyere Dance for a long time about building out our back garage as a studio space for them. And once we really started thinking about it, we thought, well, what if we switched that? What if we started working out of our garage space, and they took over the front space as like the, you know, as the front facing portion of the building. And so we approached them with it, and Vanessa was really excited about and feeling ready to move forward. So that was a big part of the design, talking with Kara about this is gonna be a dance studio now. So how do we build this out, and how do we keep it flexible? Because another thing with Vanessa, she's like, oh no, this is our forever space. I'm like, no, it's not. You guys are too good. You're going to outgrow us at some point. And you know, someone's going to build you your own brand new space at some point. And we hope that for you. So part of that was we had to think, how are we building this space out so that we're not stuck with, like, now we have to find another dance company. Well, maybe it's a theater company. Maybe it's a design company. Maybe it's, you know, obviously in the arts, but how do we design that? And Kara can probably say more to this, but just the way that she was able to listen to the needs of a theater space, and then also a flex theater space, performance space,
community
space, like whatever new life that the space may have in the future. And incorporating all of that into also just giving Kinyede everything that they need, because, you know, we want them started off on the right foot too.
I think you definitely, you know, touched on that very well, you know, because that's the fun part, I like to say, the challenging part, you know, is creating a space that is fluid, you know, and I think that's so vital, you know, when you take a space that is an older structure, you know, quote unquote, a historic building is this, you know, it's really a treasure. You know, and when you begin to peel things away, as we've been doing, you find this beauty in it. You know, where it's hole in the floor, okay, you know, but we were going to have to cover that anyway, you know, or, you know, the brick on the walls, you know, as Robin and Caitlin were touching on earlier, we couldn't keep the brick on the facade. But when you walk inside, it's inside, you know, on the interior walls, you know, and highlighting that. You know, but also keeping this rustic and character integrity of the existing structure, but also kind of merging this new, you know, these more new materialities, you know, but keeping it open. So making it a space that allows more modular and movable items, you know, as different tenants come in, you know, and as Kinyede or, you know, Robert's saying future involvement of the space, what do they see it as? You know, because creatives, we work in vision. You know, we all have a vision in our minds. You know, so Kinyede has a vision and Deconvergence has a vision. You know, and each artist, as they come in, you know, where their installations go, or, you know, the performers. So I think making it this canvas, not overstating things, you know, not thinking grotesque and dramatic and elaborate, but making it this really blank canvas that whoever is occupying the space at whatever time, it becomes theirs. You know, whether that's with Robert and, you know, his gift in lighting, you know, that's a whole nother skill, you know, and Caitlin in operations and being able to set things up, you know, so I think that was kind of our foundation of the project. You know, how do we redevelop it, keep the beauty in what we could preserve, you know, but then also just making it, like, you know, I said, this is open blank canvas for whoever's in it to experience it. You know, because I think also creatives, we can get territorial. I think it's just kind of in our nature, because we want, you know, everyone to experience and see what we're saying. You know, so if you can leave something that allows everyone to express, hey, we could maybe be on to something.
Yeah, another thing Kara's been incredible about, which we never got this far down the path with any other designer, but I'm always amazed that she's, you know, she'll let me source the materials. And one of the cool things about that is we're sourcing these materials from local like resource shops. And these are materials that would be going to the dump otherwise. And a lot of them are nonprofits, and they're providing assets for their own cause. And by being able to use these materials in our building, we're able to kind of just keep the money within our own community, and also, you know, just being in that same way, working with like what we have rather than looking through a book of things that we can order from someplace. And it just becomes, it stays more honest and interesting. And like she said, I mean, the building itself has a personality already. And I feel like she's done a really good job of letting that personality stay present while adding all of the bells and whistles that we need and kind of keeping it simple and natural.
What all the things that you each one are sharing with us are just so interesting about this inside out, but they also hint at, and I hope to have you all back as for a later conversation in the future, because they're hinting at also what it is to be a small nonprofit in the way in which a small nonprofit has to be flexible to roll and adapt. So I applaud you all for where you've been able to do. I've been talking with Caitlin and Robert and Kara about this exciting Indie Convergence inside out concept of building and not building. And we hope to have more with you later. Krista?
Until next time, I'm Krista Longton, reminding you to tune in again when we explore more curiosities from the intersections of art and science.
You've been listening to Intersections, where art and science meet, with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversation that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you to explore further in conversation with others. Any of the ideas explored in today's show at www.thedaVinciPursuit.com.